The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning, and welcome to our Dharma Practice Day. And those of you who might not know, we're doing a series this year on the five hindrances. And the five hindrances are five qualities of mind, activities of mind that make it difficult to be mindful, make it difficult to see clearly, make it difficult to become concentrated. And part of the task of anybody who does vipassana or mindfulness practice is to become an expert on the hindrances, to get to know them really well. So rather than, in some ways it's unfortunate when they appear, but rather than being discouraged when they appear or consider them undesirable guests, since we're supposed to get to know them well, when they do appear, it's an opportunity to reframe our relationship to them, understand them in a different way, and then try to look more deeply what are these things. In particular, today we're going to continue with the hindrance of aversion, and mostly by looking at the topic of anger. And it's often been said that one of the most useful things you can do around anger is to reframe it, to look at it from a different perspective than maybe the one that was triggered automatically when you get pulled into your anger. And investigating it is a way of reframing. It's looking at it from a different angle than being caught by it. So today's topic is the second hindrance of aversion, and we did one day on it already a month ago, and today we're going to look at a particular variety or form of aversion, anger. And before we kind of go into that, I'd like for us to do another sitting. But as an introduction to the sitting, both the first hindrance of desire and the second of aversion often enough can come with energy. We're motivated somehow. Something's aroused in us and churning or moving in us. And people can do tremendous things when there's desire, when they want something. It's very motivating. And also with aversion, especially with anger tends to be motivating. There's a lot of energy. Sometimes it's the motivation, the energy goes towards freezing up, but sometimes it's directed outwards, sometimes inwards to do something. And that energy sometimes translates to heat. And people talk about when they're angry, they feel hot or all heated up. There can be a lot of energy. But a different word than energy is also is the word strength or power. And it's been pointed out sometimes that anger and a sense of power, inner strength, are sometimes closely connected. There are some people who have argued that that the way that strength is felt in the body, or personal sense of power is felt, overlaps quite a bit with a sense of being angry sometimes, and that sometimes there's a confusion between the two of them. Some people love their anger because it gives them strength, it gives them power. Gives them energy. And some people actually want to defend anger because it gives them the energy and the motivation to do something, to get something done, to fight for justice, for example, or something. So there's a kind of a close connection between the two of them. But it's possible to possible to separate out strength or energy or power from anger itself. You don't need anger to feel strength or power. But there is an overlap. There's a kind of sometimes a connection between two of them. So what I thought we would do first here as a way of setting up the day is to a little bit explore in the next sitting the issue of your strength or your power. So if you would please take a meditative posture. As you take a posture for meditation, can you change your posture a little bit so that your posture somehow expresses, manifests some sense of strength or power, the inner strength of so sitting up straighter is often a way. Without straining or puffing up, sometimes sitting up straighter with the spine, having the chest a little bit more upright, the shoulders more relaxing backwards. A strong sense of presence. And is there a place in your body that you associate with inner strength, personal strength, or a sense of power or efficacy? A classic place for some people is in the belly, to have a strong sense of being grounded and centered in your belly. The hara is sometimes said to be a place of strength. A place from where strength can radiate from. Or for some people it's their hands or their feet on the ground or something in their chest. Where in your body, sitting here now, can you tap into or evoke or feel a kind of energy or energized quality, activated quality that might be identified as power or strength? It doesn't have to be very powerful or very strong, but whatever degree it's available to you. In particular, is there some way of relaxing, settling, focusing in on the area kind of just below your belly button? Perhaps in relaxing there, feeling also some solidities, solidness or strength. And perhaps the sense of strength translates into the mind as determination. Not to be tense, but a greater kind of sense of purpose or engagement. So here in the present moment, feeling some sense of strength, or power. A fuller presence, unapologetic presence. Relaxing your thinking, but with that sense of being maybe strong or powerful, engage in the meditation practice. enter into being mindful of your breath. Having that strength support the continuity of being present for one breath after another. Some people feel powerless in different circumstances or in life, and has a big impact on them. Some people feel powerful. Some people feel like there are times when they have a lot of strength, determination that has a lot of energy behind it, a lot of substantial kind of feeling of engagement, presence. So I'm curious for some of you, in the beginning, in invoking this idea of strength or power, beginning of this sitting, how did that affect your sitting? Did it make any difference for you? So I'd like to hear a little bit.
It felt really good, really good. It kind of brought up a whole, it was warm, but not like anger hot, but it was very good. I enjoyed it very much.
Was it easier to stay present or less, more difficult?
It was easier, I think.
Did you get calmer than usual, you think?
I felt really clear that it was almost surprising that I could feel this. It was in here coming, and it came up. It was coming up.
Great, thank you.
For me, I couldn't really get in touch with it so much in the belly as in the chest. That's where I really felt it. And I really had a sense of confidence in, you know, it's like, wow, I can do this. I can do anything. You know, I don't have to worry about any thoughts, you know. It was almost like...
I don't have to what?
Any thoughts.
You don't have to think about anything.
No, it's like, bring it on. That kind of confidence. Yeah. I felt, you know, really...
So did it help you become stay more present when you meditated, or did you drift more away more often, or...
I didn't notice any difference between the first sitting and this sitting as far as present. I think it was mostly just the same. But I just had more of a sense that even when I was drifting off, when I came back, it was like, yeah. I felt powerful doing it.
More connected?
More connected, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, in my body.
I think it just put me really grounded. I really feel when you said that, it really comes back when I'm feeling confident, and to me, confidence and power kind of go together, just that really stable feeling, and it's very much right in the bowl of my pelvis, just here, very stable. And it, the first sitting, I was still kind of settling in from the drive over, and it just, I felt like it was on the second or third day of a retreat. It just boom, right in there. And it could just stay very focused and just very stable through the whole sitting. It was just a really peaceful but really solid sitting.
Great, thank you.
Well, I first felt kind of solidity at the base of my spine and then the top of my head. And then I went to, after a little while of that, feeling really weak and really powerless. Mm. And then it started to, the meditation was more like a reflection, and it felt like flexibility was where the strength was. And just, you know, I could even feel my body just sway a little bit. And it felt like being ready for anything in a much quieter way, not having to steel myself to be strong.
Mm-hmm.
So
beautiful.
That's what it was like.
Beautiful. Anybody have difficulty with this meditation?
I didn't have so much difficulty as kind of more of a jarring realization. At first, when you invoked power within myself and then sat with it, it felt real armoring, real isolating, disconnected. And I realized I had to evoke a different kind of strength. So I focused on opening my heart and reciting metta. And it just really made for a more powerful sitting for me.
Mm. So I can imagine that some people have backgrounds where it requires a certain kind of way of being in the world, a certain kind of strength that maybe is shutting down or distancing, and so maybe finding a different way. Is that, and if there is more energy, connectivity, kind of engagement available to a person, what do you think a relationship between that and anger might be? say some of those you've either found or either have felt more strong and more connected in the sitting, or imagine yourself in that kind of situation. How would that... what would happen if you were angry?
I don't know if this directly answers that question, but I had an image of being in a confrontation with my father, who's been dead for 20 years.
Yeah.
But, and it was like both of us were like right in front of each other, and it was like very... it wasn't tense, but it was like, again, this confidence, this power that I felt. I could withstand anything. You know, I had this picture of hurricane winds blowing through my hair, and I was just standing there straight at him, and not flinching at all. It was a good feeling, and it was yet I was aware, the anger was present, but it was like not bowling me over or anything.
Great, thank you. Someone said, people have a lot of problems, most of which never occur.
Yeah.
Because of that power of the imagination. Right behind you.
When I was listening to you, I thought, when you said a hurricane winds, it's like anger, it's like an assault when it's coming at you. And if I could feel that grounded like I just did in the last sitting, I think I would just be able to move with it and not react with it or react to it, but I would be able to be present more. It would be great.
Yes.
I think that for me, you know, the if I'm angry, the energy that I feel gets contracted as opposed to staying open with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's a quality, there's a different quality to that energetic feeling. So it tends to rise, and then it tends to contract.
So for you, when you get angry, there's a contraction around the anger.
Mm-hmm. So contraction around the energy.
Around the energy. Mm-hmm. And great, that's nice to know. For some people, sometimes I've wished they were a little more contracted around it. And some of the people, one of the reasons some people get afraid of their own strength is because it's been manifested through their anger, through their hostility, and it's caused problems in some of the social relations, in the relationship with people, and so then they get afraid of being strong. Some people love being angry, not because it's contracted, but because it's a way of tapping into feeling strong when people don't feel strong. Maybe people feel kind of powerless, but when they have this energy, it overcomes whatever sense of powerless they might have, and so they love it. They really value that sense of power. Power and energy and anger are many different things. It's not a single thing. One person can stand in the presence of, can receive anger from someone because they feel really strong and stable and like solid, and it bounces off them in a sense. And someone else can feel a very, like Liz was talking about, very soft, flexible kind of sense of power and strength, where they don't feel like a strong, you know, rooted presence. They just feel a little more, in a great way, kind of empty and just kind of like, oh, just kind of flows through them in a way. Both can be manifestations of power or strength. Maybe what they have in common is maybe some kind of confidence that a person has. Anger is many different things. We'll go into that later today. Many people have simple definitions or understanding what anger is, and then people have different opinions about anger, and the opinions get in conflict because of what their understanding of anger is. But I think before we go any further in defining anger, each of you has your own understanding that of what anger means for you, and for the time being, that's good enough. That's fine. And what I'd like us to do is to for you to break up into pairs and do these reflective exercises where out loud you reflect, take turn, your turn being the person who reflects, and then the other person listens, and then you change roles and reflect about your history with anger. So in your lifetime, what are some of the things how you've encountered anger? What's been your biography through the lens of anger? What did you learn from your family experiences about anger? What did you learn from your personal experiences and societal experiences in relationships with anger? Oh, in my family, it was never okay to express anger. Or in my family, the way you got anything, even food at the table, was by being angry. It was really a lifesaver, and that's how it was for us. Or I've been around Buddhism for a long time, and these Buddhists seem to be down on anger, and I've been kind of struggling, you know, for the last 5 years about, you know, where do I fit in here? And, so what has been your history with around anger? Having anger of your own, being in the receiving end of anger. So, you know, what has shaped you, your views, your relationship to anger over the lifetime that you've had? What are the things that have shaped you and created you? So some of this might be very personal. So you don't have to, this is not, you don't have to reveal things you don't want to reveal to someone. You're welcome to just keep it, some things private, and don't say it. You can replace it with silence for a while until you find something else to say or some other way of saying it. So hopefully that makes it feel safe and to share with someone who's listening. And the idea is for you in this kind of exploration is hopefully to find a place where you're kind of on the growing edge of your reflection, your understanding of something. If you find yourself telling a story, telling something to your partner, that you know the story really well, and it goes on and on and on and on, the story about, you know, what happened to you in 10th grade, and, you know, and this and that, and, you know, you're not, this is not telling someone else a story. You know, it's not for their sake you're doing that. It's for your sake that you're reflecting out loud. So if you know the story, you know the end result, get to the end quickly, so that you can kind of, if you're reflecting on a story kind of for in a fresh way, in a new way to understand it, it's fine to go on. But if you're kind of like saying something you've said many times before, try to kind of get to the point quicker or do something so you can kind of come to some place where you're wondering or questioning or exploring or and also it's fine in this kind of reflection to also try things out. You don't have to be a completely 100% sure what you're saying is true. You know, you're sincere about it, but you kind of try something, explore. What is it like, you know, if I take this route and see, you know, and get feedback. And, oh, well, that didn't quite work, or that didn't really, wasn't quite the way it is. Now I learned something about myself and the process. Is that understandable? So, so each person will have about 10 or 12 minutes to talk, and hopefully that's long enough so that you've kind of, after a while, said some of the things that are more obvious, and then you find yourself kind of maybe, you know, stretching to understand or explore some new aspect of it. And it's also meant to be very open-ended, so it's not like it has to be any particular way that this exploration of your relationship to anger unfolds. If you're the listener and you listen to someone else first, and when it's your turn to share, it doesn't have to look anything like what that person said. It's your own way. It's best to clear out and let it be your own kind of thing. So, yes, please.
The listener's role is...
The listener's role is just to listen. And listen attentively, caringly. You know, you're really there present. But it's not your role to ask questions. It's not your role to approve or disapprove. It's really mostly just kind of a silent, caring, attentive listener who's kind of helping create the space of openness, of curiosity, of interest to let these things come out. And then after about 10 or 12 minutes, I'll ring a bell. And then when I ring the bell, it'd be nice to go back to silence and just be quiet for a minute and kind of clear out the best you can. Perhaps before you close your eyes and clear out, it might be nice if the listener said thank you. You said thank you to each other in appreciation. And then I'll ring a bell and then you can start, reverse and start again. Okay? So why don't we first kind of pair up. And I'll ring a bell to let us start so I can time it well. And it's you can welcome to spread out into the other room and conference room, and so you don't feel like you're hearing other people so much. Okay, so be sure to spread out. If you feel crowded around other people talking, be sure to spread out a little bit. I'll ring the bell when you start. Okay, I guess some of you have started, but now you can start. choose someone to start and begin. So you can thank your partner, and so would anybody like to report a little bit what that was like for you? There, ignore them.
Green light.
Okay. My first reaction is I always get angry when I have to do those kinds of exercises. but I like the exercise. And the one thing that came to me that I hadn't really focused on before in thinking about anger is how much anger has to do with taking care of yourself, and how not expressing anger is, maybe you think you're taking care of yourself, but you end up not taking care of yourself, and you particularly don't take care of relationships. So that was,
So for you, there's a side of anger where it's taking care of yourself. Though sometimes it's an inefficient way of taking care of oneself.
Not being aware of anger and trying to protect your partner from your anger ends up not taking care of yourself or your partner or your relationship. You know, it's how you express the anger.
Mm-hmm.
But
no.
The part of it that looking for the positive aspects of anger really struck me that has a lot to do with your willingness to take care of yourself.
Great.
Yeah.
Nice, thank you. Someone else, how was that? What was that like to do that exercise? Yeah.
When you said that you wanted us to talk for 12 minutes, I just went, oh no. And then even when I was talking to my partner, I just said, I don't even want to talk about this anymore. But then I just did take care of myself. I realized I needed just some quiet because I arrived late and I hadn't had a chance to meditate. So I just gave myself that space to settle. And then more things bubbled up. And I discovered what you did, too, that I have anger because I don't see the seeds of it forming. So I realize I want to have that intention of being more mindful of seeing the beginning roots of anger so that I don't get into this full-blown wanting to, as you said, I think it was on Wednesday night, having murderous rage. The silent murderous rage.
Great, thank you.
Hi. What came up for me is that I feel like I've done a fairly decent job of being able to come up of dealing with anger in my kind of life. When it comes up, I'm able to recognize it, but that the anger that drives me is the anger at my parents, and I don't know what to do with it. And for me, just kind of like my parents were not very expressive about anything. So I've been walking around with all this anger most of my life. And I hope that I can find a way to, I think that anger is the most like the most inherent anger that I'm walking around with and figuring out, like, well, not figuring out, but just accepting it. And because it's the anger that I don't feel like I can do anything about, and I have to continue this relationship with my parents, regardless, with that anger there existing.
So in doing this reflection here today, that this is what you realize? You realize this more?
Yeah, that I realized that and when I was talking to Shelley, that anger is just kind of like this big shadow over my life, that it somehow needs to be acknowledged.
Great. Thank you. Maybe one more.
What really came up for me is that I remembered that my first awareness of anger or of yelling was between my parents as a young child, and how afraid I was and how I just wanted to run and hide. That I didn't have any tools or didn't really know what to do with this, and that it wasn't even directed at me, but it made me feel completely full of fear. And because I'm so aversive to anger, I really think that has a lot to do with it.
You really what?
Aversive to fear. I'm so fearful of anger. To the point where it wasn't until about 6 months ago, while I was meditating and running through my physical sensations, that I said, I'm angry. I didn't realize that I ever got angry.
Congratulations. So I think it's a really rich area to explore because it's a part of, I think, everyone's lives. And some people haven't had the time to kind of really kind of reflect and put the pieces together. The challenge with reflecting on anything, including anger, is that some reflections of our life and biography aren't necessarily unbiased. And what we select out of it today might be very different than what you select out of your biography next year. And we think, oh, I'm unbiased, this is how it actually was. But then a whole different angle, understanding comes along, and you open up to new understanding. And this is very relevant in relationship to anger because anger has a fair amount to do with the stories we tell ourselves about what's going on. And so when we start questioning the stories, looking at the stories and how we hold the stories around the incident that makes us angry is a very important part of the whole process of working with anger. Some people find it's very helpful to reframe the understanding, the perspective with which we look at a particular situation. It doesn't deny or repress the anger, but there's many different points of view to understand the same thing. And so just as you might think of doing this exercise again, I'd encourage you to do it again. On your own, going for walks or journaling or finding a friend and see, you know, kind of what new perspectives, understandings come out about your history and your relationship with anger. And it's probably something that will keep unfolding for you as you do it. So let's take a break, and let's take a 20-minute break. So we'll start again here at 11:20. And enjoy the break and enjoy each other's company.